Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Korea, A Very Short Introduction by Michael J. Seth, narrated by Paul Heitch. Introduction. Korea, long in the shadows of its neighbors China and Japan, is now the object of considerable interest for radically different reasons. The South as an economic success story and for its vibrant popular culture. The North as the home to one of the world's most repressive regimes, at once both bizarre and menacing. This book hopes to encourage and inform this growing interest in Korea by introducing its history. Since there is so much to tell in such a short book, it focuses on several historical questions. What does it mean to be Korean? How did the various peoples of the Korean Peninsula become a single nation? How did this nation evolve in a single lifetime into today's sharply contrasting societies? And how does Korea fit into the larger narrative of world history? Koreans today see themselves as an ethnically, racially, linguistically, and culturally homogeneous people, unnaturally divided into two halves. They take pride in this homogeneity and in being part of a unique nation with a long history dating back several millennia. There is some basis for this belief about themselves. Virtually all people of the modern states of North and South Korea speak the same Korean language, a language which appears to be unrelated to any other living tongue. It is written in its own distinct alphabet, quite different from other writing systems. Both Koreas are, or have been until very recently, among the most ethnically uniform societies in the world, and contemporary Korea is the inheritor of a long cultural tradition that can be traced back many centuries. However, the historical basis for the modern sense of national identity is open to question, or at least qualification. Korea as a country dates only to the late Silla Kingdom of the 7th century, and even then, it was not the only state on the peninsula. The present political boundaries of Korea, when North and South are considered together, date only from the 15th century. This still makes it among the oldest and least changed countries in the world. Least changed on the map, that is. In other ways, modern Korea has shown a capacity to transform itself with astounding rapidity. This is one of its most fascinating characteristics. This book presents a chronological history of Korea, defined as the people and states that have existed within, or mostly within, the boundaries of North and South Korea. The first two chapters cover the pre-modern period, that is, the period up to the 19th century. The third covers the beginning of Korea's modern transformation during the last decades of the dynastic state and during the period of Japanese colonial rule. The fourth chapter begins at the close of the Second World War and ends with the termination of the Korean War, when the division of Korea into two states became a long-term reality. The last two chapters examine the radically different trajectories of North and South Korea since 1953. Geographic setting. The two Koreas today, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, or North Korea, and the Republic of Korea, ROK, or South Korea, occupy two halves of the former dynastic Korean state that lost its independence in 1910. Both states see themselves as the sole legitimate heir of this historical state. Even when the two Koreas are viewed as a single country, as most Koreans do, it looks small on the map compared to its neighbors, China and Russia, but it is a medium-sized country. The area that makes up the two Koreas today is 600 miles, 1,000 kilometers, from north to south, averaging about 120 miles, 200 kilometers, in width. Its size and length are about the same as Great Britain, a little smaller and shorter than Italy. North Korea is slightly larger in area, 46,000 square miles, 122,000 square kilometers, compared to the 38,000 square miles, 99,000 square kilometers, of South Korea. Most of Korea lies on a peninsula bordered on the north by China and a corner of Russia, and on three sides by the sea. While seas surrounding the peninsula make for a natural boundary, the northernmost part of the country has historically not been so well defined. Its current borders, formed 6 centuries ago, are delineated by Paektu Mountain, a 9,003-foot, 2,744-meter volcano, and the two rivers that flow from it, the Tumen River that heads northeast and empties into the East Sea, Sea of Japan, and the Yalu River that flows southwest to the Yellow Sea. Koreans have called themselves a shrimp among whales, meaning they are a small country surrounded by much bigger ones, China, Russia, Japan, and in the past great continental empires such as that of the Mongols. Today, Korea is bordered by China's northeast region of Manchuria, although through most of its history this region was not Chinese, but part of the steppe and forest lands of the northeast, home to some of the world's most formidable warrior peoples. However, China was close enough to be the inspiration for many of Korea's ideas about government, society, art, literature, and religion. To the southeast, the 115-mile, 185-kilometer Korea Strait separates the peninsula from the Japanese archipelago. Just wide enough to make these very different lands, yet narrow enough to ensure frequent interaction. In fact, Korea has often been a bridge between the mainland and Japan. Over three-quarters of Korea is covered by mountains. The principal chain, the Taebaek Range, covers most of the northeast and runs like a central spine along the eastern part of the country, with smaller ranges branching off it. The mountains are not high. Paektu is the highest, and the tallest in South Korea reaches only 6,388 feet, 1,947 meters. However, they are rugged enough to hamper trans-regional trade and communication. Cultivatable land is limited, yet is fertile, well-watered, and capable of high crop yields. The northeast has long, severe winters, but the central and southern areas have shorter winters and a longer growing season. The seas around Korea are rich in fish, squid, and other ocean products. Therefore, although it is small and mountainous, Korea has been able to support large populations. Today, 50 million people live in South Korea and 25 million in North Korea. Chapter 1. Creating a Peninsular Kingdom. Koreans are fond of saying that they have 5,000 years of history, a rather arbitrary designation. If by Korean history what is meant is the story of a nation or a people who possessed a common cause of being Korean, then 5,000 years is far too long. The first state to occupy most of the peninsula did not appear until the 7th century CE, and it was centuries later before a shared identity among the inhabitants of the peninsula emerged. If, however, Korean history is understood to be the history of the people in what comprises the area of the two Koreas today, then it is far too short, for evidence of human activity in Korea dates back tens of thousands of years. The 5,000 years is based on the Tangun, the mythical founder of the first Korean state. According to the story first recorded in the 13th century, Tangun was the offspring of a celestial deity and a she-bear. Born on a mountain today associated with Paektu Mountain, Tangun is honored in both Koreas. In the north, stripped of some of the supernatural elements, he is taught as a real historical person who founded the first Korean state. His tomb was discovered and is a tourist site. In the south, while the story of Tangun is taught as a myth, there is a holiday in his honor. For Korean nationalists, north and south, he symbolizes the uniqueness and the antiquity of the Korean people and the autonomous nature of their historical development. There is another myth associated with the creation of early Korea, the story of Kicha. A relative of the last emperor of the Shang dynasty of China, Kicha fled China to the peninsula when the dynasty fell in 1122 BCE. There, he introduced agriculture, literature, and all the refinements of civilization to the Korean people. He went on to become ruler of the Korean state of Joseon. Although many pre-modern Korean historians began their histories with Kija, in modern times, Korean nationalists were uncomfortable with the Kija myth since it suggested that Korean culture was derivative rather than original, and subservient to outsiders rather than independent. The myth, however, reflects the importance of China in shaping that culture. Early Korean societies. About 6,000 years ago, people in Korea began cultivating millet and raising pigs. By 3,000 years ago, they began growing rice, probably introduced from China. Rice grows well in the soils and climate of Korea. It is planted in the spring, matures during the hot, rainy summer, and ripens in the dry, sunny autumn. It has been the basic staple of the Korean diet for all its recorded history. It is not possible to link early farming cultures with any ethnic or linguistic group. In fact, it is difficult to say when a distinctively Korean culture emerges. The cultures of ancient Korea overlap with those of lands around it, forming a broader, fluctuating Northeast Asian cultural zone. The earliest pottery, dating from 10,000 years ago, is similar to pottery found in much of Northeast Asia and Western Japan. Bronze artifacts, such as daggers and multi-knobbed mirrors, which appeared less than 3,000 years ago, resemble those in adjacent parts of Manchuria and parts of northern China. This is also true of the megaliths. Erected during the last millennium BCE, these were modest in size, nothing on the scale of Stonehenge, but numerous. Thousands have been discovered, far more than in all of Europe. While there were two distinctive regional styles, one in southern Korea and one in northern Korea, both were part of the larger area of megaliths encompassing Manchuria, northern Shandong province in China, and northern Kyushu in Japan. Around 300 BCE, Chinese sources began referring to a Chaoshan kingdom, Korean Joseon, called Old Joseon by modern Korean historians to distinguish it from the later Joseon dynasty that ended in 1910. Joseon is one of the names Koreans have used for their country and is the common term for Korea used in North Korea. Little is known about Old Joseon, which may have been more of a tribal confederation than a state. Even its location is not certain, other than its last capital, Wanggong, which was located at the site of modern Pyongyang. The last ruler, Uguo, who is the first person in Korean history that is more historical than mythical, incurred the wrath of the Emperor Wudi of China by blocking Chinese trade with the tribal peoples of the area. Wudi sent his army in and conquered the old Joseon in 109 to 108 BCE, an event that also gave us the first firm date in Korean history. For the next four centuries, parts of northern Korea became incorporated into the Chinese Empire. It was a remote outpost whose most important center was in the vicinity of modern Pyongyang. From there, the Chinese conducted trade and diplomacy with the tribal peoples of Korea, Manchuria, and Japan, or as the Chinese referred to them, the Eastern Barbarians. For the peoples of Korea, the Chinese presence in the Northeast served as an important conduit for Chinese culture and ideas of political and social organization. By the 3rd century CE, Chinese records provide descriptions of the tribal peoples of Korea. The most important of these were the Koguryo and the Han. The Koguryo originally lived in Manchuria, north of the Yalu River, but gradually moved south, raiding North Korea while stirring up trouble for the Chinese in the process. The Han, divided into three groups, the Mahan, Chinhan, and Pyanghan, lived in the area of what is now South Korea. All appear to have spoken the same language, which most scholars believe was ancestral to modern Korean. Indeed, Koreans today, especially in the south, see themselves as their direct descendants, calling themselves the Han. Hanguk, Han country, is one of the common names for Korea, and it is the official name used in South Korea. The tribal peoples of Korea gradually coalesced into states, although the process is poorly recorded and not well understood. In the 3rd century, the Chinese Empire went into decline, and by the 4th century, was unable to sustain a presence in Korea. In the political vacuum that followed, 3 indigenous states emerged that dominated Korea from the 4th to the 7th century: Goguryeo in the north, Paekche in the southwest, and Silla in the southeast. Paekche and Silla appear in the historical record in the 4th century. Goguryeo began its transition from a tribal federation to a state earlier. There were also 6 tiny polities referred to collectively as Kaya, but these were absorbed by Silla. Another possible presence in Korea at this time were the Wa, as the ancient peoples of Japan were called by the Chinese. The retreat of China's political authority did not end the flow of Chinese cultural influence into the peninsula. Buddhist monks from China converted the rulers of the 3 states, which adopted Buddhism as a royal protective cult. Goguryeo, Paekche, and Silla carried on religious, diplomatic, and trade exchanges with the various states on the Chinese mainland, and modeled their bureaucracy and legal systems on them. Each used Chinese for record-keeping. Despite the growing influence of Chinese culture, each of the 3 kingdoms was ruled by warrior aristocrats, mounted archers, whose lifestyles showed affinity to the peoples of Manchuria and Inner Asia, from which the ruling classes probably descended. Goguryeo, the largest of the 3 kingdoms at its peak, covered most of southern Manchuria, North Korea, and the area around modern Seoul. From its base in the Yalu River Basin, it expanded southward into the area around Pyongyang, where it relocated its capital. Paekche, centered in the rich agricultural lands in southwest Korea, was a more urbanized and literate society than its rougher warrior neighbor to the north. Nonetheless, its ruling family claimed Manchurian origins and was dominated by a warrior aristocracy that wore armor, rode horses, and were skilled bowmen. Much of Korea's pre-modern history was shaped by its interaction with China, not just culturally but politically, and it was China's intervention in the peninsula that precipitated the unification of most of the peninsula. For 2.5 centuries, the 3 Korean kingdoms fought each other for supremacy. In 589, China was reunified under the Sui dynasty. The Sui and the Tang dynasty, which succeeded it in 618, worked toward securing their border areas. This included the elimination of Goguryeo, which Tang achieved with Silla's help. The first Tang imperial government supported Silla's conquest of Paekche in 660 and then carried out a joint invasion of Goguryeo. Following Goguryeo's fall, the Chinese rulers attempted to make Silla into a client state under their control, but instead, Silla drove the Chinese out of the peninsula in 676. There was now a single state in Korea. Late Silla. When Silla drove out the Chinese in 676, it absorbed Paekche and the southernmost parts of Goguryeo. South Koreans often refer to this as the unification of Korea under Silla. According to many accounts of Korean history, Silla was followed by 2 changes of dynasties. Each time the kingdom would be renamed. First, Goryeo in the 10th century, and then Joseon in the late 14th. Still, it was essentially the same state, whose demise came only in 1910 when it fell under Japanese rule. After 35 years as a Japanese colony, Korea would be divided by the Soviet Union and the United States in 1945. The 2 states, North and South Korea, that emerged in 1948 can be seen as successors to the original dynastic state created by Silla. There are problems with this common interpretation of history. Silla did not unify Korea. It controlled somewhat more than half the peninsula, all of what is now South Korea, and small portions of what is North Korea. This included most of the rich rice-growing lands and a majority of the population, but most of the northern part of Korea was ruled by another state, Parhae, founded in 713. Koreans have long debated whether Parhae was a Korean state, and thus Korea at this time was divided into North and South, or whether it was non-Korean. It is not an easy question to answer, since there was not yet a single Korean language or culture. Most evidence suggests that Parhae was primarily populated by peoples who were not directly ancestral to modern Koreans, and most of it was outside the boundaries of Korea today. Even if Parhae is excluded from the mainstream of Korean history, the fact remains that the state constructed by Silla broke apart for a generation at the end of the 9th century. Nor did Silla's successor, Goryeo, control all of what is now Korea. Only in the early 15th century did a Korean state govern a territory that neatly corresponds to the two Koreas today. Another problem with seeing Silla as creating a unified Korean state is that it is difficult to say how unified or how Korean Silla was. It is not clear, and it is in fact unlikely that there was a common ethnic identity or linguistic unity during the Silla period. The creation of what became an ethnically and linguistically homogeneous society with shared cultural identity came about only after many centuries. The process was far from complete when Silla came to an end. Furthermore, the kings of Silla struggled to create a unified, centralized state and had only mixed success in doing so. Late Silla did, however, display patterns of political and social organization that characterized later Korea. It was a rigidly hierarchical society with hereditary ranks, dominated by powerful aristocratic families. These families derived their wealth from the ownership of land and slaves. Beneath the aristocracy were commoners. Some commoners were free peasants, others were tenant farmers, and others craft persons. There was little social mobility, and commoners were kept in their place, not only by being excluded from positions in government, but by requirements that their clothes, homes, and carts should be different from those of the aristocracy. Below the commoners were slaves and outcast groups who inherited lowly occupations such as butchers, tanners, and ferrymen. The nature of elite status evolved, but the basic social structure remained fundamentally unchanged to the end of the 19th century. The monarch sat at the apex of society, but in reality, he had to share power with the upper aristocracy known as the true bone. In earlier times, the royal family belonged to a hereditary rank known as the sacred bone, a name that implied some religious or priestly authority. Kings claimed to be descended from ancestors who had supernatural origins. In the 7th century, the sacred bone line died out, and kings were chosen from the true bone rank aristocracy, thus losing some of their awe-inspiring quality. Leading families met in a council, the Habeg, an institution that rivaled the authority of the king, and they possessed their own private armies. The Habeg institution did not survive Silla, and eventually private armies disappeared, but mixed monarchical and aristocratic governance continued throughout the dynastic period. No longer in its expansionary phase, and facing common threats from Parhae, Tang Dynasty China welcomed Silla into its tributary system. Under this system, the court in the Silla capital, Gyeongju, flattered the Chinese emperor's pretensions of being the ruler of all civilization, sending groups of emissaries with gifts to him. Under the guise of an exchange of gifts, or tribute, they would engage in trade while the emperor would bestow legitimacy upon the Korean kings. Through these missions, a continual flow of Chinese art, literature, and technology entered the kingdom. Its officials wore Tang-style robes, and its administration adopted Chinese nomenclature. Some members of the elite wrote poems and essays in classical Chinese. The court sponsored an academy that taught Chinese classics. Hundreds of Koreans, mostly members of the lower-ranked aristocracy, are known to have studied in China. Silla, however, maintained both its political and cultural autonomy. In addition to the use of Chinese, the elite wrote in Korean, using Chinese characters, mostly for their phonetic value, and the kingdom's administrative structure differed in many ways from that of Tang. More fundamentally, while the Tang state gradually reduced the power of the hereditary aristocracy, Shila's powerful aristocratic families never loosened their monopoly over important government posts. Korean kings were never able to concentrate control into their hands as effectively as Chinese emperors often succeeded in doing. And while anti-Buddhist sentiment asserted itself in late Tang, Buddhism's central place in Shila society and its links with the state remained undiminished. In the 9th century, Shila went into decline, linked in ways that are not fully understood with the political and economic decline of China at that time. Power gravitated to local strongmen, banditry plagued the countryside, tax revenues shrank, further weakening the state. In 900, a rebel in the southwest established a new Paekje state, and the next year, another rebel proclaimed a new Koguryao state in the north. Historians have labeled these breakaway states Later Paekje and Later Koguryao. In 918, Later Koguryao's founder was assassinated by one of his commanders, Wang Kon. He renamed it Koryao, a shortened form of Koguryao. Once more, there was a struggle for supremacy among three kingdoms. This time it lasted 3 decades instead of 3 centuries. It is not clear if the fragmentation of Shila meant that the unification of 676 was, in fact, incomplete and the old regional loyalties and identities were reasserting themselves, or if later Paekje and later Koguryao were just names adopted by their founders to give a historical weight to their new states. Whatever the case, Wang Kon ended up the victor, putting together a reunified state under Koryao. His dynasty ruled Korea for more than 4.5 centuries. Korea never again experienced political fragmentation. Koryao. The state reassembled by Wang Kon in 935 remained mostly intact for 1,000 years. This statement needs qualification. There was a change in dynasties and a name change in 1392, but it remained essentially the same state, although there were significant differences in thought, culture, and systems of government. Within its framework, Korea went a long way toward developing into an integrated society with a shared culture. Koryao, in fact, along with Joseon and Hanguk, is one of the most common names used today by Koreans for their country. The English word Korea is derived from it. Wang Kon regarded his kingdom as a successor to both Koguryao and Shila. This is reflected in his new capital at Kaegyo, modern Kaesong, 50 kilometers north of modern Seoul and just inside North Korea. It was near the center of the peninsula between the former Shila capital of Gyeongju and the former Koguryao capital of Pyongyang, both of which Wang made his secondary capitals. To strengthen his link with Shila, Wang Kon married into the royal Kim family and appointed Shila aristocrats to key positions in his government. Later in the dynasty, scholars emphasized Koryao links with Shila rather than with Koguryao. They were careful to point out that the last king of Shila had designated him as successor. This was the position taken by historian Kim Pusik, himself a descendant of the old Shilan aristocratic lineage, in the Samguk Sagi, History of the Three Kingdoms, completed in 1145. This traces the story of Korea from the mythical origins of the Three Kingdoms to the end of Shila in 935. It remains our most important source for ancient Korea. The Samguk Sagi treats Shila as the unifier of the Three Kingdoms, leaving Parhae out of Korean history, and the Wang dynasty as the legitimate successor to the royal Shila Kim line. Before completing his work, Kim helped put down a revolt led by the monk Myo Chong to transfer the capital to Pyongyang. So Kim Pusik not only kept the kingdom from shifting its center to the north, he contributed to keeping Korean history anchored in the southern-based Shila state. Wang Kon and his successors faced the same problem that the Shila kings did. How to create a centralized state out of a land of powerful warrior aristocratic clans rooted in their home base.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?